This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Charles Menehue, former Houston Texan, met with the media yesterday. He's on the 49ers now. They've got a playoff game in Green Bay this weekend, a game you can hear.
That sounds fun.
Right here on Sports Radio 610. Dude, the atmosphere at a Green Bay playoff game, that would be fun. That would be fun.
That would be a good time.
In the cold and in the snow, getting hammered with the locals.
Let's go to the Super Bowl this year.
In L.A.?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we can hear Charles Menehue say stuff like this, except, no, because, Sean, we'll go to media night, and you get guys like Charles Menehue for like a half hour up there.
Oh, yeah,
those are the guys. Those are the best guys. We need to go to the Super Bowl. Whichever team is there and whichever former Texans are there, we will just grill them for like a half hour.
We need the Titans at the Super Bowl,
and
we need the Packers in the Super Bowl.
Yes.
That's what we need.
In those, especially with guys like Menehue, it's not like at the Super Bowl he would have a throng of reporters around him the whole time.
Yeah.
So we could just sit down and have basically an exclusive interview about exactly what it was like.
Hey, Dylan Cole, tell us about your time in Houston. He's on Tennessee, by the way, for those who don't know. Here is Charles Menehue yesterday when he was asked to compare the team he's on now, the 49ers, to his former team, the Houston Texans.
A lot more structure. The leadership between the coach and the GM, it doesn't seem like it's a power struggle. It's very like they're on the same page. They have an understanding of what they want. They make it very clear of what they want from GM to head coach, from head coach to the position coaches. And it's not a circus show here. You guys definitely have things down packed, and you know what you want at the players. The coaches know the expectations, and it's sought out and said. And it's not a lot of switching guys from being a starter, not being a starter. Like, I mean, you understand what you're doing here, and you just get it done.
Seth, what was of all the things he said in there, that was Charles Menehue, for those of you just getting in your cars, San Francisco 49er, former Texan. The things I jotted down when I was just scratching notes, more structure, no power struggle between the head coach and the GM. And then obviously the money shot is not a circus show. And then he compares it to a circus basically here. I'm no longer surprised when guys leave here and they've got things to say about what goes on in the organization here. It's become a pattern. Randall Cobb, Whitney Merciless, to varying degrees. I think Zach Cunningham may have had a few things to say in Tennessee when he finally got in front of a mic. It all blends together at this point. Was there anything in there from Menehue that you found noteworthy or surprising other than just, here's another former Texan that's talking bad about the organization?
Well, I think I was trying to figure out, okay, what things would be normal that a guy might say if he's departing from anywhere. And it was a place that maybe didn't, I don't want to say they didn't like Charles Menehue, but obviously the two sides didn't see eye to eye.
From jump. Like,
right,
remember
right.
when he was third string on the depth chart behind Whitney Merciless in preseason?
So I think that, how much of that was personal versus, like, something that's going on systemically? Because Menehue was notable that, what are they doing with Menehue? It wasn't like we were saying, like, what are they doing with all these different guys shuffling them around? It was Menehue specifically. So I don't know exactly what the kernel of all the discontent between him and the team was. But it was the way he was treated, or at least the way he perceives he was treated, I'm imagining, was different than like how it was for everybody else.
Yeah.
So he was kind of a disgruntled guy. When it came to him talking about how there's no power struggle between the GM and the coach, I didn't know, you know, Mamenihu was in Houston for 3.5 years. So he saw a power struggle between Brian Gain and Bill O'Brien.
Yeah, he was drafted in 2019. So yeah. he was here 19, 20, and half of 21. So 2.5 seasons.
So Brian drafted Gain drafted him.
Brian Gain drafted him, yes.
Then he saw the Texans fire Brian Gain.
2 months later.
try to hire Nick Caserio. At that point, Amenihu had seen a general manager, a head coach, who were in conflict with each other, but they were the same person. It was Bill O'Brien's tortured soul that was leading it, the many faces of Bill O'Brien. But then this year, obviously, it would be David Culley and Nick Caserio. Were David Culley and Nick Caserio at odds with each other during the season this year? Is that I think the perception is that I think a lot of people, the perception is like, well, Culley just took orders and that's how it is.
Well, I think there's two things, examples I would bring up where it could happen. One, Culley was a disaster as a game manager, so there could very well be conflict over, hey, dude, how about listening to what I'm saying on that? Culley admitted he wasn't listening at the end of the New England game, so that's number one. Number two, at the end of the year, here's Culley basically giving everybody a pass on the coaching staff for how horrible they were, saying we're bringing everybody back, and Tim Kelly winds up getting fired figuratively sitting right next to David Culley, you know, so I think there's definitely contention points.
Like, obviously, Amenihu wouldn't have been here for that part, but he still talks to people. So I would imagine in his case, what I've seen before in the NFL that I've experienced is that sometimes if there's a disagreement between the general manager and the head coach, the player picks up on it. I mean, maybe when Amenihu was listed as third string on the depth chart, even though he had played like he should be the starter, Culley might have told Amenihu that, hey, I'm in your corner. And I'm saying that completely hypothetically. I have no source or anything there. But he might have said, like, hey, yeah, I think you should be starting, but, you know, Nick thinks this or Nick thinks that. That stuff does happen.
Yeah.
I told you the story about when my position coach told me I was starting. The GM told me that they might have to cut me because I'm not a starter and I was my salary was too high. Like this stuff does happen.
And Culley was not to cut you off, Seth, but in the preseason when Amenihu was very mysteriously listed as third string, Culley got asked about it multiple times and was like, "Well, Charles is going to play. Like Charles is a good play. Like he kind of took up for Amenihu, if I remember correctly, in some of those press conferences, so you might be onto something there.
You know, I always wonder if this, it would be, listen, everybody, just settle down before you start pointing out the differences in this comparison. But I know what's
coming. Bracing myself.
I'm going to make a Moneyball reference.
Okay.
So they're different sports. I get that. I understand, everybody. Okay. Different sports. And I'm going to make an Art Howe reference. And I am in no way saying that Art Howe and David Culley are the same guy. But they were both managers/coaches under a GM that maybe loomed large and had the dominant force in the relationship. So Billy Beane with the Oakland A's was the GM, and Art Howe was the manager, who at the beginning of the season knew that they were going to be doing things differently and was cool with it. You know, like Art Howe was like, okay, I get it, I understand. As the season went along, I think Art Howe started to realize, and Billy Beane started to realize, okay, this wasn't as easy as we thought it was. That it's okay that the manager, even though at the beginning might be cool with taking certain directions, is going to start to get kind of PO'd after a while.
You're talking about the coexistence not being as easy as they
thought
it would
be. Yeah, it's not so easy to kind of just say at the beginning, this is how it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And Art Howe started to rankle at some of the things. Not to the degree the movie. Listen, kids, if you watch Money the Ball, the movie, they very unfairly portray Art Howe.
Yes.
For one, by casting Philip Seymour Hoffman.
That's the worst part, yeah.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, awesome actor, but kind of a doughy, goofy-looking fella.
Right.
And Art Howe looked like he was chiseled from stone.
Yes.
And it was not nearly the dullard. Like, Art Howe understood what the A's were doing.
Right.
But just on the ground level, it just didn't quite work out. And I think with Culley and Caserio, I could very much see a scenario where, yeah, Culley knew what he was getting into and he thought he'd be cool with it, but after a while he started to realize, wait a second, these guys just want me to be a puppet. And So maybe there was a little bit of that, and maybe, hopefully, if that was the case, Caserio and those guys can learn from it.
Yeah, yeah. We'll have to dig in a little bit later because it's almost like a greatest hits album right now with the Texans have now been compared to a circus. They were compared by Randall Cobb to a prison.
Ooh.
Who? What person. Else? Have, what else like have they? What, oh, they've been compared. Familiar. They've been compared to a startup company.
Oh, that's right.
By
yeah.
Nick Caserio, of all people, compared mm-hmm. them to a startup company.
Several times.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
They were not a startup company.
And Randall Cobb compared him to it. Yeah, Randall
Cobb. No, that's right. Randall Cobb called it a startup. And yeah. I think Caserio made the same analogy.
Yeah. So they're in agreement. I think we're all in agreement on that. This is...
Has anybody compared them to, like, a cat house or anything
right,
like that?
Right, or a taco know? Stand. That would be yeah. great. That would be awesome. I love tacos.
Has anybody compared Houston to a sauna yet? Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. All right, 713-572-4610. So that's the latest on former Texans throwing shade, Charles Omenihu. I would say 4.5 stars on a scale of 1 to 5. Good job, Charles. All right, who does the it's mock draft time in 8 cities around the NFL. It's playoff time in Houston. It's mock draft time, and we finally get to pay attention to the first round. Who does the godfather of the mock draft have the Texans taking at 3 overall? That's next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What up, y'all? It's your boy, Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host, Harrison Sanford, on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday mock draft time here in the city of Houston. You like a mock? Sorry. You like a good mock draft, Seth?
More so, I've started to come around on them. You know what I despise more than anything, Sean?
What's that?
And one of our listeners, Tom Middlescreen, knows this, so he's constantly forwarding these to me.
yeah?
The 7-round mock draft.
Oh, I love those!
I hate them.
Why?
So I don't hate them as an exercise. I hate them when people do them and then are proud of themselves by putting them up and showing like how they got 7 starters.
Oh, you're no
with
fun.
All 7. Yeah. There, I know I'm not. But Sean, it's not my fault.
Why?
It's because some people genuinely believe it. They're like, look, I've got 7 guys. They've all got good grades. These guys will all start the first year.
The best is
that's
when,
what drives
the
me.
The best
insane.
Is when other people start grading them and they're giving good grades, and you feel like you accomplished something. Like,
yeah, no, yeah.
I'm not the only one who thinks it was awesome. You know, at Texan Joe 485 thought I got an A-.
It really is. It's no different than like going to a casino and thinking that because somebody chose 27 on the roulette wheel, like, oh, that was a hell of a pick right there, pick.
Well, this is what we just learned. This is going to be a long few months. I'm Payne and Pendergast. I'm telling you right now. All right, so Mel Kiper Jr., who people can think what they want about Mel Kiper Jr. He is the godfather of this format. He was doing mock drafts back in the early '80s in his basement on a notebook somewhere. So Mel Kiper Jr. has his latest mock draft up. Got Aiden Hutchinson going number 1 overall there. No big surprise. He's got Kayvon Thibodeau going number 2. Number 3 to the Houston Texans, Seth, Evan Neal, tackle out of Alabama. If the commissioner stepped up to the podium and said, with the 3rd pick, the Texans take Evan Neal, offensive tackle out of Alabama, how would Seth Payne feel about this?
I'd be excited about it. I think that, I like people that are physical freak shows. A lot of times it works out that the physical freak show ends up not being that good in the NFL. I don't care. Because the guys that are physical freak shows, like a Jonathan Ogden, it turns into something that, when it does work out, it transforms your team in a way. Because these guys, I kind of think about football in this way. I like in my mind when I'm looking at players, I almost look at like how big a bubble there is around them. There are some players that have a huge bubble around them, and it means that guy can basically take care of more geography than other guys on a football field. And defense, I think the same way. Like, if you have inside linebackers that can cover and stop the run and everything, they've got these, in my mind, they've got these huge bubbles around them. And they make that whole area safe and secure. So if a guy like Evan Neal works out, then he's taking care of a massive chunk of real estate on your offense for a long, long time. That's what I like about offensive linemen, is that when they're good for a long time. And typically I feel better about re-upping offensive linemen in the long term. I think they end up maxing out their contract lives better than a lot of other positions. Whereas versus like cornerback, yes, cornerback is very important, but it's just the fall off in cornerbacks is so drastic and severe at times. They go from being the best in the league to just mediocre in the course of two seasons. It doesn't happen like that with offensive linemen. So I get excited about offensive linemen picked high in the NFL draft.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Kiper's comments about the Texans and Neal. He says the Texans have holes all over their roster. I think they'd take Hutchinson or Thibodeau if either fell out of the top two, but Neal could be a 15-year starter at tackle or guard. He played both at Alabama before settling in at left tackle. This is where maybe there's a bit of a disconnect nationally and locally with the Texans. Houston has Laremy Tunsil at that spot, but a thumb injury forced him out of 12 games. They could take Neal, the Texans, and figure out his best position later, not unlike what the Lions did with Penei Sewell in the 2021 draft. So Kiper doesn't even acknowledge the possibility of dealing Laremy Tunsil, which I think if you're local here in Houston, you realize, especially after listening to Nick Caserio on with you and me the other day, it's a distinct possibility Laremy Tunsil's not here.
Yeah, and I think that... I think there's a distinct possibility Tunsil's not here, and I think the Texans are at a point in the life cycle, too, where it's best player available. And it's not just like the lip service best player available when it's actually – you know, when teams say that, usually it's some blend of best player available at a position of need or what have you. I think with the Texans, there's not a single position where you say, like, well, they're so deep, why on earth would you draft that guy?
Right. No, but I would say this. If they do a deal with the Giants for Deshaun Watson, let's say, who have the fifth and the seventh pick – Kiper has three of the top six players taken as offensive linemen. He's got Neal, he's got Ekwonu out of NC State, and he's got Charles Cross out of Mississippi State, all gone by the sixth pick. If they do a deal with the Giants where they wind up with two of those top seven, I think you'd lock it in that one of those is on one of those tackles. Yeah. I'm one of those offensive linemen right there.
I kind of like the idea of taking like three offensive linemen with your three top picks, all top 10 picks in the draft. That'd be fun. Because that'd be a classic. Like, it's either boom or bust.
Yeah.
If these guys don't work out, then, hey, Caserio's out on his ass. But if it does work out, we're talking 1990s Cowboys, Sean. 1990s Cowboys. We'll be the insufferable losers 30 years from now instead of all these Cowboys fans.
This is where
we'll be gloating about how awesome it was back in the 2020s.
This is where I pour cold water on it by reminding you the Texans did come into the season with an offensive line that had invested two first-rounders in Laremy Tunsil, a first-rounder in Titus Howard, a second-rounder and Max Sharping. They let a second-rounder go in Nick Martin. They've invested capital in the offensive line before.
So what you're saying is they're due.
They're due,
Sean.
Yes,
come on.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
So you got to stop thinking so rationally about this stuff.
How about this?
It is. No. Hmm. There is a certain element of truth to that. Like it is. It's luck of the draw. The draft is a crapshoot.
You gotta.
Everybody, you're going to be a lot happier in life if you just accept that.
Yep.
If you stop believing that your opinion about what should happen in the fourth round actually has any chance of being anything more than a random guess.
Kiper has four quarterbacks going in the first round. The first one he has going off the board, which if he winds up, nobody else is forecasting this right now. Malik Willis, 11th overall to the Washington football team, first quarterback off the board.
Is Mel Kiper tipping his hand that he knows something nobody else knows?
Maybe he is,
or
in that
is he
DC
just a crazy
area.
Old loon? I think he might be turning into a crazy old
both
loon.
Both are possible.
that he's less about the film study as this newer, younger generation of people. But he knows people who say things to him.
He's got four quarterbacks going in the first round. Willis at 11 to Washington. Pickett to New Orleans at 18. Kenny Pickett from Pitt. Matt Corral, Ole Miss, to Pittsburgh at 20.
Oh.
And Sam Howell to Detroit at number 28 with their second first-round pick. The pick they got in the trade with the Rams for Matthew Stafford.
If there's one thing that the Pittsburgh Steelers of yore did really, really well, it was get premier positions late in the first round and in the second and third round. They've made a history of it.
Yes.
I mean, You know, it was funny. I remember when Antonio Brown left the Steelers, people were saying things like, well, you can't go out and pick up an Antonio Brown in the third round. Like, yeah, that's exactly what the Steelers did.
He was like a sixth rounder. Yeah,
that's right. He was a sixth rounder or something. But they do that with receivers pretty well. They've got a pretty good knack for picking receivers.
Dude.
I think with quarterbacks, they probably feel the same way, that they, you know, they identified Roethlisberger as a guy that a lot of other teams passed on, but they took him in the 20s, right? In the first round.
11. And they took Roethlisberger with
the 11th.
11th pick.
I'd take it all back.
11th pick.
Stupid.
11th pick, but
they were dumb for taking him 11.
No, but you're he only won two.
They should have waited.
Bowls.
They should have traded back.
Yep.
Should have traded back.
Your point about wide receivers is a great one though with the Steelers. I've said that for years. Whoever scouts wide receivers for the Steelers, I don't know who he is. And I'm sure it's more than one person, obviously. You know, I'm sure there's a collective effort. But just, you know, tongue-in-cheek, I've always said, whoever scouts wide receivers for the Steelers, I'm putting that guy in charge of my scouting department. Because they find guys, it's seemingly every year, like on day three, who turn into players for them. We're getting a lot of texts about the Charles Omenihu cut that we played. If you missed it, Charles Omenihu, in a press conference yesterday, went in on the Texans when he was asked to compare them to the 49ers, talked about the Niners having more structure, no power struggles. The money shot was, he said, the Niners are not a circus show. I think this is a fair text. You have to take anything Omenihu says with a grain of salt. One, he's a disgruntled former employee. Two, he is massively emotionally immature. Three, this is the one that I think is a fair point. Three, he's not very good. I mean, he's flashed. This is me talking now. The text said he's just not very good. I don't think he's a bad football player. But the whole thing, Seth, when he's like, you know, here you're not getting jerked in and out of the starting lineup, back and forth and things like that. And I'm thinking to myself, dude, you're Charles Omenihu. Like, you're not Reggie White. You're not Godfather. Yes, we all thought it was odd that you were third string in the preseason on the depth chart. We all concede that. I said that in August, so I'm not going to change my stance on that. But as far as getting moved in and out of the starting lineup and you're Charles Omenihu, you play less now than you did when you were a Texan.
It is, you know, and it's funny, man. I try to tell young guys that, like, every chance I get. Like, whatever the hell you do, if you end up leaving your current team, do not talk smack on your way out the door. Because guys just don't realize. They think, oh, there's 32 teams. There's work everywhere. Like, a lot of times, even for, like, relatively good players, there might only be a few teams that actually want you. And it's so dumb to burn bridges. It's really, really dumb.
Life.
And then you might think, like, oh, well, I don't want to go back there anyway. It's better than real work, man.
No doubt.
Like, if it was so, you're right. So far, Whitney Mercilus, Randall Cobb, Charles Omenihu. Who else is?
I got to go back and see if Zach Cunningham had anything to say.
Mercilus was a little bit of a gut punch, Sean. Not because I disagreed with anything that he said, but just that as a fan, you almost feel like, oh man, like, come on, Whitney, just play the role of a good soldier for a little bit.
Yeah.
Don't take shots on your way out.
Especially because they gave you the worst contract in the history of the team a couple years ago.
They had paid him, Bill O'Brien's, one of his parting gifts was to give Whitney a contract that was way above and beyond what he likely would have gotten in free agency.
You're not even close. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. All right, quarterback situations, impossible markets that could have interest in Deshaun Watson. There's two where we got updates yesterday that we need to go through here if you think these are markets that could be in the mix for Deshaun Watson. That's next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so if you listen to the show, you know there's about 10 or 12 teams that Seth and I have repeatedly listed as possibilities. Varying degrees of likelihood, but possibilities for Deshaun Watson. Two of those teams are the Philadelphia Eagles and the Cleveland Browns. We got updates yesterday on where each of those teams currently stand to some degree with their current quarterback situation. Let's start with Philadelphia, where Jalen Hurts was there's no other way to put it. He was a mess in that game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He did not throw the football well. I believe 23 of 43 on the day, had a couple back-breaking interceptions in that game. It was a rough day for Jalen Hurts and the Eagles. Howie Roseman, though, the GM of the Philadelphia Eagles, is still firmly in Jalen Hurts' corner.
You know, we talk about Jalen and the growth he had, really first-year starter, second-year player, leading this team to the playoffs, tremendously impressed by his work ethic, his leadership. We talked last time was during camp, and we said we wanted to see him take the bull by the horn, and he certainly did that.
Okay, so he was our starter all year long. Here's Ian Rapoport, the NFL Network, giving some analysis on where the Eagles really stand with Jalen Hurts.
It feels like the rest of the league kind of knows that the Eagles are going in this direction. I did some reporting on this on Sunday as well. Jalen Hurts has done enough in the minds of Philadelphia Eagles brass. You heard Howie Roseman be very clear today. Yes. That Jalen Hurts is going to be their starter going into the offseason. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of talk about veteran quarterbacks available from Deshaun Watson and maybe Russell Wilson and maybe Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, certainly there's going to be some others as well. Jimmy Garoppolo, maybe Derek Carr, a lot of them. I don't expect the Eagles to be in the mix for them. Now, will they always look at potentially upgrading if someone says, like, hey, I want to join the Eagles? Obviously, they would. Howie Roseman always looks into it. But this feels to me sincere and real that they are moving forward with Jalen Hurts as their quarterback. There's two options here, Andrew. They can use all that capital to trade for a quarterback, or they could use all that to make their quarterback better. Mm-hmm. I think option two is the one.
I think the thing Rapoport touches on there, Seth, that I wanted to hash out here is the sincerity of what Howie Roseman said in that first cut. And I'll point out, you know, before people say, well, that's just what GMs do, they're not going to say this or that, I'll point out that Chris Ballard of the Colts, who ironically traded high draft capital, a first-round pick that the Eagles now own for the guy that Jalen Hurts replaced, Carson Wentz. Like, Chris Ballard, in his press conference, was non-committal to Carson Wentz, who they traded big draft capital for. So this is not something where all GMs step up to the podium and just take up for their guy.
Sean McVay last year, well, not a GM, you know, basically gave the old Jared Goff as our quarterback for now.
Yes. Yes.
Something along those lines. Yep. There are times when guys really show their hand with that. But I do think that there's also gamesmanship. And I think Howie Roseman's been around a long time. I'm curious what they really think of Deshaun Watson right now. And it might be easier to say this if they think that Deshaun Watson definitely doesn't want to come to play for the Eagles. If you know, as McClain's been saying all along, that Deshaun definitely doesn't want to go to Philadelphia, then maybe the Eagles can just say, okay, well, we don't want him anyway.
Right.
We like Jalen Hurts. But I also think, too, something that Howie Roseman said, which is completely true, is that it's hard to build a team around a good quarterback when you don't have any draft capital and maybe a couple of active players. You know, the Texans are reportedly asking for 5 pieces, which would mean 3 first-round picks plus 2 other things, either draft picks or active players or something like that. So Roseman's saying it's really, look, you can get a great quarterback, but it's hard to build around that guy if you don't have like cheap labor and high draft picks and all of that.
Well, and they're set up to have a ton of it.
Yeah, so I think, but it could be a little bit of that, you know, when the best way to get a girlfriend is to not want a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Because people can smell the stench of desperation on you. So I think that maybe Roseman's talked himself a little into, well, if the Texans do want to trade Deshaun Watson, the price is a little too high right now, so we're just going to play it cool, and we're going to just be 100% focused on Jalen Hurts. But if all of a sudden somebody comes knocking and there's a pretty good offer on it, we'll definitely consider Deshaun Watson.
Yep. So that was Howie Roseman on Jalen Hurts. So as of right now, at least publicly, they're all in on Jalen Hurts, who, by the way, left that game on Sunday It was Sunday. Yeah, early Sunday game in a walking boot. Apparently he had some sort of foot or ankle issue he'd been dealing with. I don't think that's why he was 23 of 43 throwing the football in that game.
He was sailing it.
He was banged up.
Maybe he couldn't, if he couldn't plant quite right.
Maybe.
I mean, because he was like high and wide on a lot of stuff.
Like
uncharacteristically inaccurate. And boy, for a guy, you're right, you brought this up. His last 2 postseason appearances were a national championship game in which he was benched. And well, no, never mind. Not the last 2 posts. Last, like a playoff format, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, because he played that 1 year in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
So the other situation was Cleveland and Baker Mayfield. Now, the Browns, I believe, have publicly said we're rolling with Baker Mayfield next year. Again, these are things that I think can change, but Baker Mayfield underwent shoulder surgery yesterday. He went on social media to give us the update.
Hey, everybody, just wanted to check in. Surgery went great. Was a complete success. Had a great medical team that took care of me and checked that box off to get this fixed. And now it's on the way to, you know, the road to recovery. You know, this is one of those steps to get back to my true self. This past year hasn't been very easy. A lot of stuff has gone down, and it wasn't easy on me or my family. So I appreciate everybody that's reached out, that wished me well and good luck on the surgery, all the prayers and everything. It definitely did not go unnoticed, so thank you. Thanks to everybody that's helped out so far. Now it's on the way to the road to recovery. It's not going to be an easy one, but it's going to be one that I'm going to remember, and it's going to be a special one.
All right, so that's Baker Mayfield. I said he underwent the surgery yesterday. He posted that yesterday. I'm not sure when he underwent the surgery earlier this week. Baker Mayfield did. So shoulder surgery for him. It's a huge year for Baker Mayfield next year. This is a guy who came into the year probably thinking at some point I'm going to get the Josh Allen contract or some high percentage of a Patrick Mahomes contract. He's basically in a contract year next year now. He's in his fifth year. He's playing his fifth year option out next year. He's Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston next year. That's what he is.
The Browns, right now, if you're a Cleveland Brown, I wish there were a way. Why don't you have one of our Cleveland Odyssey people do a poll about would you rather have Deshaun Watson or
Baker Mayfield? Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's a good call. I'm right in that.
He did that. Baker Mayfield put that video out, and I kind of, you expect there to be all kinds of nasty snarkiness. I'll say, by Twitter standards, it's actually a pretty wholesome response to Baker Mayfield. There's something about being in a sling that even the trolliest of all trolls won't attack you when it looks like you're down, you're damaged.
That was a deluxe sling too. Like
I was jealous.
He looked like he had his arm ripped off and replaced with a robot arm.
It looked like a $6 million man sling.
Kind of cool. I'm not going to lie. Kind of makes me want to go tear my shoulder up and get surgery so I can get a badass brace like that.
Slings are the worst. Of all the multiple surgeries I had on various body parts, shoulders were always my least favorite because you can't sleep after. You have to sleep in a lazy boy, and you're like the sling itself starts to like give you headaches because it's pulling down on your traps and everything.
Yeah.
Shoulders suck. Shoulders are really a son of a, yeah.
What was your total surgery count? How many times did you go under the knife?
I think 14.
Jeez. Yeah. Wow. It's like a tradition. Yeah. It's like the Masters.
It was such
a
bad idea. I would plan off-season vacations around it.
Around your surgery?
I never planned a vacation in like early February because I had to account for either making the Super Bowl or having postseason surgery.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. When you say you planned your vacation around it, did you plan your vacations to be just after the surgery, so you had ample amount of painkillers for your vacation?
No. I never took I don't like painkillers. That's not my thing, man. I'm not saying that as like some kind of superior thing or anything. Like I said, I like plenty of mind altering substances, alcohol chief among them.
Sure.
But there's some of the painkillers that they don't do it for me. I would always get off painkillers as soon as possible, even if I was in pain.
Really?
I just don't like the way it feels.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
The one time that I did, I remember, I was like, okay, I'm going to do it right this time. I'm going to take all my painkillers just to stay ahead of the pain and all that. And I remember after the first prescription ran out, I was just starting, like, those last couple pills I could see where, like, I needed that next pill. And I was like, and I was still in a lot of pain. I was having a hard time recovering from the surgery, but I was like, no, there's no way I'm getting that second prescription. That's how it gets you, man. Like, I didn't know.
So you were worried about getting hooked on those things.
Yeah. Oh. And I don't even like it. Like, it doesn't, I don't even like the feeling, but I started to get that feel for what it's like to be hooked on painkillers.
Yeah.
And that's an awful feeling, too.
Not fun.
I really feel bad for people that get stuck down that road. It's awful.
Yep. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. So
tried to sell my wife at an underpass, Sean.
While you were on painkiller.
You got any oxy? I only got two left in my prescription.
Brandy. She's like bringing your wallet out to you. No, I don't need the wallet. I need you. He needs you.
Are we going
to
give this nice man a couple dollars? No, I'm giving him you. He's got oxy. Or at least he claims it's oxy. Sure looks like Tylenol, but whatever.
Pick you up in 5 days. All right. So Philly, Cleveland, we're getting texts about Deshaun possibilities. Okay. This happened on Twitter too. I'm always fascinated by the people that are like, hey, you guys aren't talking about her. Hey, nobody's talking about this team. Seth and I have talked about every team. We can't list all the teams every time we talk about Deshaun. I promise you, if you're bringing up a team that's reasonable, we've talked about them. For example, Texter, and we appreciate you listening. Nobody is talking about Deshaun Watson going to the Steelers, except Sean and Seth. Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool, Juju Smith-Schuster, Najee Harris, Freiemuth at tight end. And this texter's making the case for Deshaun going to the Steelers. I think the Steelers, I think the Steelers football-wise would be a great, great stop for Deshaun. It's a rabid fan base. They are known to be okay with quarterbacks who've had issues off of the field, Roethlisberger. And I think the only thing there is just how into the marketing part is Deshaun. You know, like how into the glitz is he? Because Pittsburgh is the opposite of glitz. Although it is kind of football glitz. It's a blue-blood franchise.
I'll tell you what. I mean, it all depends on what you're into. And if it... I think it was just too easy to assume that part of what Deshaun wanted in Miami was part of that South Beach lifestyle, I think, when obviously there was a lot more substance to it with Brian Flores maybe being key amongst those factors. The thing about Pittsburgh, Sean, is that just from talking to guys who played for the Steelers when the Steelers were good, it's just an experience unlike any other in the NFL. You know, probably kind of like the Green Bay experience, but a little bit different because it's geographically in a different area. Pittsburgh's an actual city, at least.
Yeah.
Unlike Green Bay, which is like a nice...
It's a town.
It's a town. Yeah. It's a tiny city.
Yeah.
But the fact that Steelers fans are just... They're like a less psychotic Raiders fan base.
Yeah.
I think they kind of they're psychotic in their own way, but not in as scary a way as maybe sometimes some of the Raiders. I guess the costumery isn't quite as drastic.
A much lower chance of you getting accosted at a Steelers game than there is a Raiders game. Although I've been to one Raiders game in Oakland, and it was delightful. It was a Sunday night game against the Chargers. Amy and I went, and they could not. Now they looked like scary people, but they could not have been nicer.
They're dressed up like they're in GWAR or something.
Yes, that's exactly it.
But I guess most of the people that dress like you're in GWAR probably in real life, they're not that way. That's their alter ego.
That's right.
But anyway, it's an experience unlike any other, and it's one of those things kind of like when you're a Steeler that was on one of those great Steelers team, you're a Steeler for life.
Exactly.
And I don't think that a guy like Deshaun should discount that, given that over time, even the people that are diehard, you know, Deshaun backers right now, most of those guys are going to start to kind of fall by the wayside as time goes by after Deshaun leaves.
Yep. If no one does a text message, if no one trades for Deshaun, is there any way for the Texans not to pay his $40 million next year? The answer is no. If he's on the team, they're paying him, and his salary next year is guaranteed. So
yeah, it's hard for them to cut him. This is the hard thing. And this is I'm not saying Deshaun would do this, but this has been kind of the trend, is that guys all of a sudden have a mysterious back injury or hamstring injury when they can't play. And the team can't fine you for not playing you when you're injured or when you've got a nondescript back injury. And that sucks, but that's the case. And, I mean, if the morals clauses in NFL contracts aren't usually all that. It's going to be hard for the Texans to get out of that contract.
Yes. Yep.
The closest they could get is if they could prove conduct detrimental. But Deshaun, the team has backed up Deshaun in this. They've said nothing but positive things about how Deshaun has done everything they've asked him to do.
Yep.
And he's been in meetings and he's done all this stuff. So I think it would be hard for them to get a conduct detrimental against Deshaun. Deshaun's playing the game the right way. And like whether it's right or wrong, he's punking the Texans when it comes to playing the game. They're getting punked, and that's all they're right now. Maybe they get something for him, but right now they're getting punked.
You're highlighting something that I want to dig into a little bit, but let's do it within the context of headlines here.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
The headline with the Texans is that they are looking to add a fifth name to their head coaching search, requesting an interview with Los Angeles Rams offensive coordinator Kevin O'Connell. He's been their OC in Los Angeles this past season, spent some time with the Redskins. He's off of that Sean McVay tree. And I say Redskins because they were called the Redskins when he was there, but yes, it's the Washington football team. But Kevin O'Connell requested an interview the Texans have requested to interview him for the head coaching position. He's got a good pedigree, a good background. I think he'd be a good hire. He certainly would be a hire that has minimal Patriot ties, if that matters to everybody. He was drafted by the Patriots in 2008. I believe that was Nick Caserio's first year in his whatever role he had in 2008 as in player personnel. Seth, my question is this. As we talk about Deshaun Watson, Deshaun Watson was with this team in training camp last year. As you pointed out, anytime David Culley was asked about Deshaun, he said, oh, Deshaun's coming into the building. He's doing what we're asking him to do. I think part of David Culley being hired as well was this is a guy that will be really bothered by nothing. So Deshaun Watson being in the building, Deshaun Watson being at practice, David Culley's personality is conducive to what could be a distraction with Deshaun Watson because David Culley walks through life very happy-go-lucky at everything. And I think there's something to be... I'm not saying that negatively. I'm saying that's a positive trait that played into his hire. These other guys, the Kevin O'Connells of the world, the Brian Flores of the world, the Joe Lombardi, all these guys are interviewing. They're serious candidates. Like these are guys that are looking to be head coaches for the next 25 years of their lives. How do they handle Deshaun being around, if indeed he's still around in July?
It's a good point, Sean, in terms of the contrast between the David Culley hire and these guys. You went to the exact opposite end of the spectrum. And I don't think it's because they want to get as far away from a David Culley type as possible. But I think that you're right in that these guys are guys that have been tabbed or have had the buzz of like, okay, this guy's a future head coach. Whereas David Culley, there just never seemed to be that buzzed by anybody that he's a future head coach.
This is not a fantasy camp this time around. You know what I like? There were times where David Culley's head coaching tenure felt like a head coaching fantasy camp for a guy.
It's a really good question by you. How are these guys going to handle the question when Nick Caserio says, well, I guess ideally, I hope these guys are asking the question. Like these guys, these interviewees, if they're genuine head coaching candidates and as savvy as they should be, they're asking questions about Jack Easterby. They're asking questions about Nick Caserio in the headset. Not that either of those are deal breakers, but they're going to want to know. Like exactly, okay, this is what I've read. This is what I know. Tell me the actual story or what your version of the actual story is. And likewise, I think they're 100% going to say, okay, what's our plan for dealing with Deshaun Watson? And I do it. You know, I worry sometimes, Sean, when owners and maybe even GMs hire head coaches. I think I worry sometimes that they're too blown away by a guy coming in who has a plan without realizing, like, wait a second, this guy can't implement this plan without actually knowing what the landscape is here.
Right.
So, like, how can you have such a hard and fast plan when you really don't? Like, every city or every team is completely different. Mm-hmm. So, if a coach comes in and tells me he's got a plan for how they're going to handle Deshaun Watson, I'm going to say, well, screw you, buddy, you arrogant SOB. If a coach comes in and says, all right, like, I need to know how we're going to have a plan for dealing with Deshaun Watson. That's where I need you guys. And, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and claim I know how I'm going to handle it during training camp.
That's
or anything.
Really good.
I need information from you guys before I give you that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Boy, when you lay it out that way, Seth, I'm asking questions about Jack Easterby. I'm asking questions about the headset. I'm asking questions about Deshaun Watson. None of them are deal breakers, but I got to ask about these things. It really does illustrate how different this job is right now than these other ones.
Yeah.
I mean, like, honestly, like, you're going into the building in Chicago, and I'm just pulling Chicago out of thin air. You know, I get Chicago comes with its own set of issues with the ownership there. You know, like, the McCaskies, what are they? But there's no other team where you're asking about the pastor-turned-team executive, the quarterback that's been accused by 22 women of some bad things in civil lawsuits that wants to be traded even before that.
Plus and another two that have also done that haven't sued, but that have pressed charges or have made complaints to the cops.
Yeah, HPD is involved in this. Oh, by the way, HPD is involved in this thing.
Yeah, by the way, the grand jury results aren't known yet. Yeah.
And by the way, I'm the one GM, the guy you interviewed. I'm the one GM who doesn't put on a suit and tie and sit and schmooze the owner all day.
Yeah,
you'll be talking to me plenty during the games as well. Like it's
unique.
It's unique. It's right. Absolutely.
I think Caserio probably has great answers for all of those questions. I think it's going to take a certain type. Yeah, I think it might be harder. It's going to be harder for the Texans to find the right guy than a lot of other teams for good reason. Where you see the Texans as, you know, eighth on the list of desirable coaching locations, it's not unfair. You know, maybe it's inaccurate ultimately, but it's not unfair given what people know about the team.
Yeah, I think the biggest question is it something that scares off good candidates? I don't think anybody last year was worried about good candidates because we knew what the deal was last year. Now it's your second hire. You got to get a good candidate now.
I really think, Sean, probably the biggest potential asset the Texans have going for him right now, and this is what I would hope, is that just that Caserio has good word of mouth. I mean, that's really, like, any GM that signs with the Texans, or excuse me, any head coach that takes this job with the Texans is going to do it trusting that Nick Caserio knows how to build a winner. And then also, I think because Cal McNair, despite all the different mistakes and everything the Texans have had over the last couple of years, Cal McNair is an owner who's very willing to spend. Mm-hmm. And that's something that a lot of other owners simply are not. And some of those longtime loser franchises, the owners aren't willing to spend as liberally as Cal McNair has spent. So those are the two biggest assets the Texans have right now. Now maybe a guy's from Houston originally or something. Like, who knows? That's all a crapshoot. But those two things are hopefully something that they can spin in their favor.
Okay, so if I'm a head coach and I'm looking at this, I go, okay, but I would be your third head coach. Boy, if you count Romeo Crennel as an interim, I'm your fourth head coach since the beginning of 2020. Nick, you're the, if we want to count interims, fourth GM since the beginning of 2018.
Yeah.
So why would I feel like if I misstep one tiny bit, I'm not gone after 2 years?
This is what I would say as Nick Caserio. I would say, hey, look, listen, everybody loves holding up the Steelers as an example, right? And this is something that I believe in too, right?
Right.
And but imagine, if you will, for just a moment, that if the Steelers hadn't, like, either had made the good decision or had the good luck to hire a Bill Cowher and then a Mike Tomlin. If they had whiffed and hired, I don't know, Bruce Coslett or something instead of Bill Cowher back then, should the Steelers have stuck with Bruce Coslett for 20 years like they have with these other coaches? No, I think like the Steelers made some good decisions, but I think the Steelers also would have walked away from a bad decision as a coaching hire. So we're in a point in our life cycle where we made a couple of errant decisions and we're trying to get it right, and we think that you might be the right one.
You're the streak breaker for us.
Yeah.
You are going to break our string of bad decisions.
The Steelers were an awful, awful franchise before, oh, dang it, Sean.
Chuck Knoll.
Thank you. I'm an awful person. It's been a rough mental day for me. I forgot about Jalen Hurts' entire year at Oklahoma and the playoff game that they played in. I couldn't remember Chuck Knoll's name. There's something early on that I screwed up. I apologize.
You're forgetting what you forgot right now.
I forget what I forgot.
Yeah, yeah.
I forgot three things this morning, and I can only remember two of them. And I feel good. I don't know what's going on. Do I have to trade happiness for competence?
That is the most Seth Payne quote of all time. I forgot three things this morning, and I can only remember two of them. That is money. All right, so that's your Texans update. Kevin O'Connell on the list of coaches they would like to interview. Next headline, Bruce Arians. Fined $50,000. Seth, I've been waiting to talk about this with you. Bruce Arians, during that playoff game on Sunday against the Philadelphia Eagles, there was a bit of a scrum after a play. Andrew Adams is one of his players, was getting ready to go pull a player off of the scrum, which would be a penalty. Bruce Arians jumped out onto the field. We'll let the play-by-play guys take it from here.
Bruce Arians comes in. He's pretty excited. He takes a whack at Adams. I don't know if he's not exactly sure what that's about.
All right, so Bruce Arians, for those who didn't see it, and Seth, I will admit, I had not, because I was doing my Sunday show while the Eagles-Buccaneers game was going on, so I was only watching it half-heartedly while I was doing a national radio show. I had not seen this play until I saw that Bruce Arians got fined $50,000. So when I saw some people's description of it, and I saw that he got fined 50 grand, I'm like, oh my God, this sounds like a Woody Hayes situation. Dear God. I don't know, man. Like, he grazed the dude's helmet with kind of a swipe and then kind of nudged him backwards with his elbow to get him away from the pile. Sorry, Mike Florio. I kind of skew to the side where 50 grand feels a little excessive for this, but I don't know. How do you feel about Bruce Arians getting fined $50,000?
I'm going to be honest with you. When I was trying to pull it up during the break, it wouldn't pull up for me.
Okay.
So I disapprove.
What? Everything.
You know what? Remember when Mike Munchak was on the sidelines a couple years ago? This is when he was the offensive line coach for the Steelers. Somebody got somebody got pushed out of bounds, and Munchak's like hand got caught up in the guy's dreads, and people, like idiots who didn't know who Mike Munchak was, like genuine idiots, were acting like, "Whoa, that coach better watch out. That coach better watch out because that guy will kick his butt." Like, that's Mike Munchak. Mike Munchak could murder 99% of NFL players right now.
Yes,
you know, like, and without blinking an eye. And it wasn't intentional or anything. He like accidentally got his hands caught up, like the hand that was holding his clipboard got caught up in like a couple of the guys' dreads. But I want to say that Mike Munchak got fined for that, which was absurd. But it's okay. So Arians just kind of pushed the guy in the head, right?
Yeah, and then kind of stuck his arm in between him and the pile of players to move him back.
Yeah,
that's how
yeah.
I saw it. It was written by some as it was written by some like he head slapped him like he's Deacon Jones or something.
And they said laying hands on football players should no longer be one of those ways that you coach a football player. Okay, this is where something similar happened last year. Oh no, it was one of those viral videos on Twitter of a high school game. If a guy is breaking up an altercation, like, would you like him to just use please more often? Like, how exactly are you supposed to break up a physical altercation without laying your hands on people?
Right.
I know. Can we have a little bit of sanity here, people? Can we have a little bit of just like less nonsense? If you're trying to physically move somebody in a heated situation, it's okay to put your hands on that person if you're not trying to inflict harm or embarrass them.
Would you like to hear Florio's take on this?
Yes.
I'll read it. I don't have a verbal. I don't have the audio.
Well,
of it.
I just read part of it. Yeah.
As previously explained here and during our weekday real estate on Peacock, it was critical for the league to send an unmistakable message to coaches at every level of every sport. There is a boundary that cannot be crossed when it comes to interacting with players. Plenty will disagree. If you do, you're wrong. Too many. God, Florio is really good at riling people up. If you do, you're wrong. Too many yahoos. He actually spells it Y-A-Y hyphen who's. And bullies who coach youth football used to think it was okay to verbally and or physically abuse players. By fining Arians, the NFL has reminded all football coaches and those responsible for hiring and firing them that there is a bright line that cannot be crossed, even in the name of tough love or, air quotes, hard coaching.
Yeah, I guess I can see where he did kind of, I guess he swatted him across the, I don't know. Did Adams complain about it?
I don't know. It's a good question. That's probably a question we should be asking. Like, how did Adams feel about this?
You know who it was? It was an ex-NFL player who's coaching right now. And what this Twitter thing, I'm sure somebody's already texted in the answer to this. It was this high school kid had gotten in a fight with somebody on the sidelines. But, of course, they do the old thing where they cut to just where the coach is grabbing the kid and sitting him down physically and making it look like, oh, wow, he just grabbed this guy and then shoved him down into a seat. Like, no, he was trying to fight his teammate. Like, with I'm at a loss. I don't know what to do. I don't know if I can't lay my hands on somebody to stop him from assaulting somebody else. And I'm not, like, you know, punching him in the face or something. I'm just grabbing them and moving them aside. I don't know what's to be done, Sean.
Yep. You're listening to KLT and KLT HD2 and Odyssey Station. Yeah, and then if the kid went and beat the snot out of the other kid, they'd be like, why aren't the coaches breaking this up?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Where are the fathers? Yeah.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.